This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
11 o'clock hour, Cody and Gold hanging out here on a Tuesday. Thanks for being with us as always. Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon. You guys can interact with us on the Jay Southland Tow Service text line 913-586-7965. We'll get to the trash of the day here in about 15 minutes or so. But we all know running backs were a huge story entering the draft. Everybody talked about the depth. Yesterday, we discussed our thoughts on the Chiefs selecting a running back in the seventh round. And in total, there were 12 running backs selected in the first four rounds. That was the highest number.
It's crazy.
Highest number since 2020. And of course, there was multiple running backs in the later rounds, and the Chiefs being one of those teams that did it. The interesting thing now is, are teams overcorrecting? Because I got that pushback yesterday. We put out the clip of you and I talking about how we would have liked them to take a running back earlier. And we got a lot of pushback on social media, being like, hey, what did you want them to do? Did you want them to trade up in the first round?
It's pretty clear. Just take a running back earlier than the seventh round.
Correct. That's basically, to sum it up, essentially what we were saying. So now the question is, because someone posed this to us as well, and that was, well, are the Chiefs just kind of doing the opposite intentionally of other teams? Like, they think now teams have overcorrected.
Zigging and zagging, sure.
We're not going to know the answer. Do you think that's what's going on here? Or is it just, no, they think Isaiah Pacheco is going to be Isaiah Pacheco again for one more year?
I think it's that. I think it's way more that than they've just course corrected from the rest of the league. Because they got firsthand witness account of what it's like to have an elite level runner in Saquon Barkley and how that eventually led to a team to beat you in a Super Bowl. They also have won multiple Super Bowls with Damian Williams as their starter, Isaiah Pacheco, a seventh rounder, as their starter. The thing that I still couldn't shake was the idea that they once thought running back was a valuable enough position in the NFL to spend a first round pick on it. And since then, their running backs have been either cheap, dirt cheap, free agents like Kareem Hunt on league minimums, seventh round picks or undrafted guys. That's it. That I think a fourth or maybe or a sixth tossed in there. They have given zero resources to it. So some of it is definitely they're going the opposite way of the league in the sense that they probably only valued it that one year because they were trying to maintain the elite level offense that they were. And they thought by doing that right away, they could do it. And they've never truly valued running back all that high. But I think some of it might just, I wonder if some of it for this year is, and maybe this is like a move down the road, is there a possibility of like a different veteran ending up in here? One that's safer than Elijah Mitchell? Didn't like 80% of the league just make their running back rooms a little too full based on the fact that 12 running backs somehow found their way in the first four rounds and some of those teams already had backs like Cleveland, right? I don't think Nick Chubb was going to do anything, but they had a guy like, you know, like, you have guys in-house, and then you take two more running backs and kind of make crowded rooms.
I don't think the Chiefs will be in that market, if that market ever exists during training camp, that somebody goes and decides to cut the veteran that you'd be interested in trading for before he gets cut or whatever. I mean, look at this room right now. The locks are Isaiah Pacheco, Kareem Hunt in this running back room. And then you have Elijah Mitchell. You have Smith, who they just drafted. And then you've got guys like Carson Steele plus these other undrafted guys. Like, I just don't know. At this point, now that they didn't do it in the draft, there's not.
You just think it is what it is.
This is the room. We'll find out who gets chopped on the back end of it. But we know on the top end, it's Kareem Hunt, Pacheco, and then most likely Smith. But it's a seventh rounder. Anything can happen as far as his placement on the roster. There's no guarantees as a seventh rounder, although my guess is he will make the team.
Will he get snaps? I don't know.
I'm not sure. Yeah.
That's always that's why I'm asking. I'm not saying anything has to happen or will take place right now, but the way the running back stuff went in the draft this year is everyone valued it more but the Chiefs. Almost every team in the league valued it more than Kansas City. And because of that, I'm still wondering whether or not there's some veteran move or some hidden potential. Look, I know all the rumors for the guys that were happening before the round, which were Breece Hall and some of, like, I don't think those guys are going. I think those guys would have had to go before the draft. But some of those veteran guys who float around, because what's your backup plan this time? If Hunt gets hurt or if Pacheco gets hurt, Hunt, you already picked up.
Well, like, they would say, well, Elijah Mitchell plus the rookie.
Elijah Mitchell, I mean, he's never healthy. He's even less likely to be healthy.
They're not going to have seven Mitchell. Running backs on the team, dude. Like,
no, I know. I just meant like off of the street situations.
Yeah. Well, that's why they shouldn't have signed Hunt or Mitchell before.
No, I agree.
Who was going to take Elijah Mitchell before the draft?
I agree.
Which is why I think they
might. Cole might be right, where they might just be valuing it differently.
Well, and maybe they did value the position. Maybe they valued the draft to be there, but they saw an opportunity and they went and they got Kareem Hunt and Elijah Mitchell. And as a result, they're like, well, we don't have to take a running back that high. I mean, based on what Ryan Nutt said in his availability, it sounded like they were kind of always eyeing Rashard Smith, and they noticed Dylan Sampson went later, Devin Neal went later. They realized they could wait until the seventh round to get their guy anyways.
I understand that logic, and I'm not even saying Ryan Nutt's lying about that. But I'll just be, if he was like a real part of your plan, you wouldn't wait till the seventh, even if you thought you could. But what I mean, you know, because like it's always the two stories that come out after the draft. We knew, even though we thought this guy's a superstar, we'd wait till the seventh. And then the stories that came out today, which were, we've now know 10 teams are trying to trade up for Gelati in the third round. I'm like, well, then why didn't you just take him in the second? You're so worried about all these teams snag, you know, like. It's easy to frame it that way after that, like everybody was going to take this guy instead of us, or nobody was going to take Smith, because there were plenty of running backs available still when Rashard Smith did come off the board, and they didn't have a sixth, so they weren't able to take a guy at that selection to go with it. But I think that it might be more what you're saying in the first. I think that they might just value the position differently. Look at the resources over the last 5 years. Look at the resources, or lack thereof, that they have put into running back. They are seventh round picks, undrafted guys, or dirt cheap free agents. Old vet guys are just on the street, you know, and it's never really mattered. And the Patriots during their run, for all the stuff we talk about copying the teams that had dynasties before, they occasionally had a guy that they took in the second round, but for the most part, it was just dudes.
My thing's consistent. It's not about using a first or second round pick.
I never wanted that.
Although I wonder if they've put themselves in a corner that they might have to next year. It is. The room, to me, needs to be more explosive. And I know immediately, and this is, by the way, this is like the answer to any criticism of the Chiefs. You'll just text in, I'm speaking generally, you'll just text in or tweet at us and just say, well, they've won rings. Nobody's saying that they're terrible what they do. But you're still trying to discuss how can the team get better in certain areas. And sure. So, like, if the answer to any criticism is, well, they've won Super Bowls, well, then what are we doing
here?
What are we doing here if that's the case?
Like, I'm trying to figure out how they can win all five Super Bowls they're in, not just three of five. And
if you want the offense to be better and get back to a top five offense, how can you do that? One way might be to be more explosive in the running back room. I don't know. That's one idea. The Chiefs disagree with that. I mean, although I think they agree, they just don't value it the same way.
That's all. I just think that they value running back different than the rest of the league, and they've decided not to hop on the trend. And that's fine. You don't have to, like, their system of operation has worked better than a lot of other teams' system of operation.
Of course it has.
But this goes back to the Bean thing. Like, so earlier we played this Brandon Bean clip. They're like, he should probably just shut up, seeing I keeps losing to the Chiefs in the playoffs. And while it's funny to dunk on the Bills for being a little brother to the Chiefs, and it is, I'm not arguing that that's not funny. People are allowed to be happy with the job they're doing, even if they're not the best, because they're better than most of the other people. Is Brandon Bean supposed to think he's bad at his job now because he can't get past the Chiefs? No, he's just worse at his job than Brett Veach, but better than his job than 24 probably other GMs in football. So, like, he can't think that his plan is failing miserably every day. And maybe it's that it's not that Brandon Bean is worse at his job. It's that he can't hire Andy Reid or draft Patrick Mahomes, and that every other part of the job he's doing is fine. He just can't overcome the two things that make it almost impossible. The other part of the draft that I find fascinating is, I always like that you draft a guy and you're like, what does it mean for blank? I think there's two players that are the easiest people to have a conversation about in this year's draft. So what do the two defensive linemen mean for Felix Anudike Uzama? And what does Jalen Royals mean for the future of Sky Moore, Juju Smith-Schuster, and the rest of the bottom end of that receiver group? Those to me are the two that come out of the draft and you ask the question. Because someone asked me yesterday, I'm sure they were asking me because I've been critical, but like, once they take those, what's that mean for FAU? in a weird way, nothing. Because I think the story's kind of now been settled a little bit on FAU in that he's a rotational defensive lineman with limited play time available for Kansas City, in which I think he's stuck. So if you want to say that, I think he's stuck exactly in the role he was in last year, and that's probably what it means. It means the growth has a cap to it, and it probably did anyway. I don't think it fundamentally changes his positioning on the team.
Yeah, I don't think it does. I would also say, just once again, contract-wise, they don't have many guys on the defensive line under contract after this season. So Carl Loftus, they'll make a decision on in the next year, maybe this offseason. You have a one-year deal with Minnehue. Mike Dana, we've gone over this as well, the way his contract is structured. So whether, I mean, of course, if Felix was a star, maybe you don't need it. But even if he was better, I still think they needed to draft a defensive lineman.
Multiple, like, honestly.
When we were saying they needed to draft a defensive lineman, it wasn't just because of Felix. It was they need depth on the defensive line.
I mean, he's on a one-year deal.
Yeah.
Chris Jones is getting older. Dana's on and last year, his deal, all that stuff.
And as far as, like, on the other side, on the offensive side of the ball, you know, Royals is the pick and everything like that. You know, what does it mean for Sky Moore? Like, he, I think, is very evidently, based off of last season, including the injury, Sky Moore was always going to enter training camp this year as a potential cut candidate. That was always going to happen. And that's what he's going to enter training camp as a potential camp cut candidate.
I can't remember the exact site. Can I ask something about for those of you who click on articles or listen to shows like this? I saw a headline yesterday that said it was photos of Sky Moore. Sky Moore is like, Sky Moore working hard to like prove to the league who he is this year. And I'm like, prove to the league? Do you get someone to click on that? Because the man's exercising? You think he's just going to be good now? Like, come on. We don't have to, like, overhype a player unnecessarily. Like, is that enough to be like, oh, my God, Sky Moore's working out, guys. I think he might be good now. Watch out.
I don't remember.
That's what I was
saying. All athletes post the workout video stuff.
It wasn't Sky Moore. Not Sky Moore who was saying this.
Yeah,
it was just,
that's not a big deal.
The other. When I look at it, I think Sky Moore's not going to make the team. I think it probably means more for Sky Moore because Felix always a part of the team, a part of the defensive line.
Look at the wide receiver room. Let's just do the quick math.
Sky Moore is huge. One of the two is not making the team.
Do the quick math. You got the front three and Worthy, Rice, and Brown. Royals is going to make the team. He's a fourth round pick. He's making the team. So there's four. Then you have, what, two spots left after that? For 5 and 6.
So sometimes they go 7. Okay. Sometimes they go the extra offensive lineman. This year feels like an extra offensive lineman.
Let's say it's 6 to be safe for this hypothetical.
Yeah.
So then Juju is 5. And then if you're Sky, you're battling with another undrafted guy or two, plus Nico Remigio and Justin Ross. That's basically what we're talking about for the 6th spot, probably.
I mean, those guys. I can't believe how many years in a row are Nico Remigio and.
Well, he proved to be valuable last year at times.
Ross going to be on this team. Like, right now, would you rather have Nico Remigio or Sky Moore?
Nico Remigio,
yeah.
Kick return.
100%.
Yeah, he has more value.
He does. I agree with you. I just think one of those.
But again, let's remember, we're
team.
Talking about the 6th wide receiver at this point. So, in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah. What's your guess? Juju Smith-Schuster or Sky Moore gets cut? One of those Sky. Two, I think, does
I
not
think,
make the
I think
team.
They like Juju for his blocking ability. I'm serious. For his block, he's a really good blocker as a wide receiver. That does matter. Plus, he also had showed in a pinch last year, he stepped up big in that Saints game.
Not that this is surprising information, but Jeremy Fowler, a little Chiefs news. The Chiefs plan on picking up the 5th-year options of corner Trent McDuffie and pass rusher George Karloftis. The team will be submitting those applications today. None of that is surprising news, but the Chiefs will pick up the 5th-year options for both Trent McDuffie and George Karloftis.
Okay.
I'm guessing that'll open up the possibility of working on the contract for Trent McDuffie now that that's underway. Some of those teams got to avoid picking up the 5th-year option first, but as a reminder, and this is, I honestly feel bad for him for this, because Trent McDuffie was not voted to the Pro Bowl in his first 3 years in the league, he will make $6 million less on that 5th-year option because he didn't make the Pro Bowl. Even though we all know he's better than probably a player who did, he will make significantly less money on that 5th-year option than if he had made it. That's a really interesting hiccup in the contract stuff. The other guys who got paid, there was a guaranteed number attached to year 5 that was more money than is attached to year 5 of Trent McDuffie's deal. So you kind of have to just ignore that if you're the Chiefs and you're just trying to like get him paid like everyone else, or you're asking him to take a cut that he shouldn't have to take a cut on because he is a Pro Bowl caliber player but didn't get voted to the Pro Bowl. It's so such a weird system. I feel bad for him. It's insane that he gets less on that fifth-year option.
NFLPA, for whatever reason, has allowed that to happen.
Is there any way that they don't actually sign McDuffie?
Someone said he was all-pro. They give him the money for Pro Bowl.
Yeah, it's stupid. Is there any way he's not on the team after when?
I know, like, I mean, in terms of giving him the contract, is there any way that they don't do that?
No, they love him way too much.
I mean, anyway, of course, it's not 0%. I would be shocked.
99.8% of my opinion.
That they do pay him.
99% chance that they do pay him. Yeah, I think it's a very small chance that they don't.
I'm saying you'd be shocked if they don't.
Yeah.
Like, Karloftis, I would put more in, like, there's some variance in that, and how this defensive line plays this year could factor into it if they don't get a deal done sooner. All the things that like kind of make sense. If you talk to anybody at all around that team, not just really like, they are in love with Trent McDuffie's game. You don't just let top corners go.
They view him as a pillar for like the next era, right? Like all the, think about like all the, you know, we talk about marketing the team. Like typically you see Mahomes, Chris Jones, and Travis Kelce as like the three faces. Here in about a year it's going to be Mahomes and Trent McDuffie and maybe one of the wide receivers.
Or Creed Humphrey, I'd like to vote for him.
I don't know if the center is going to be like viewed as the face of the franchise, but you know what I'm saying? Like, right, you would say during this current era or previous era, if you think we're about to enter a new one, it's Chris Jones, Kelce, Mahomes. It's going to be Mahomes and Trent McDuffie and somebody else here in the next 2 years. I really think that's how they view him.
Part of the reason I'm asking is just because I wonder with them picking up the fifth-year option, does that... Are the Chiefs actually going to try to get something done with him before the season starts? Because I think the Chiefs, if they want to keep him long-term and pay him, they should pay him now.
Prevent them from paying him now.
But I don't know if are the Chiefs going to be aggressive in trying to give him that extension now, or are they just going to, in a way, just be content with that got done? We need to focus on Karloftis
They won't even touch Karloftis's contract till Trip McDuffie's
Trey
Smith has to get his deal done first, and then they can work on Trip McDuffie, and that should be priority one after Trey Smith's deal.
I think there's a chance that Trip McDuffie tries to play this thing out for the same reason I just mentioned fifth-year option.
Yeah.
But it's just, it's always a two-way street. Sometimes, like, the problem is when you should just offer him to be the highest paid corner, they don't take it, versus they want to wait. Like, we talked about this with Cincinnati. They made a mistake. Ja'Marr Chase said a number he would take.
Yes.
They wouldn't pay him that number. Money. And then they had to end up paying him more because they didn't just give him the number he asked for. I don't think that that's what will happen with McDuffie. I think it'll just be a question of if he thinks two or three more corners can get paid before he wants to or needs to get paid. Those are slightly different arguments. I imagine they'll have those conversations with Trent McDuffie, but I'm with you, Gold. I bet it'll be after the franchise tag deadline for Trey Smith to get a new contract. They won't even kick around the deal probably until then.
Well, that's because I wonder, because Justin Jefferson got paid 2 years ago. Ja'Marr Chase got paid now. Like, there was the highest paid wide receiver didn't change, where Sauce Gardner still has yet to get paid. Right. So if you're Trent McDuffie, his agent's probably in his ear saying, hey, if Sauce doesn't get paid, I don't care if they offer you the most money, you shouldn't want to get paid either. You're going to wait until Sauce gets that deal.
But again, I think everyone's stretched it a little bit more. Horn could have said that. Like, there's been already four corners this year have been paid who could have said the same thing.
Well, of course.
Somebody's going to get paid last, but everybody can't get paid last. So typically, like, it just kind of depends on the player individually. I've never really gotten the sense of McDuffie. And in the interview he did with whoever it was, now I can't remember, he did the interview clip where he said, it's not about the total amount of money. It's just about making sure that I'm paid commensurate with my performance.
All right, we get to the trash of the day. This one takes us also to Chicago. Yesterday was Chicago with the bag of money, remember, left on the street. This one involves Midway Airport in Chicago. A flight from Philadelphia to Chicago was met by law enforcement and medical personnel. You might be wondering what the heck's going on. Well, police were called to meet a Southwest Airlines flight as it landed in Chicago after reports that a passenger on the flight took off her clothes and defecated on her seat.
What happened?
A source.
Bad reaction to some, like, pop-up.
She took her clothes off as well, so not just an accident.
Well, you know, bad reaction to, like, a drug.
A source with knowledge of the situation told NBC News the passenger had removed her clothing and defecated on the seat, forcing the plane to be taken out of service for cleaning. The incident follows series of flight-related troubles for airlines.
I've never taken one. I know people do when they fly, but you always hear about these like people doing crazy stuff on like Ambien. Is anyone afraid to like take an Ambien on like a flight like
just
that?
Go because night.
Are you
night,
sure?
Night. Yeah.
You're not going to take your clothes off and defecate in the seat?
On an
you don't know what the hell's going on.
I mean, your first time ever taking an Ambien probably shouldn't be on a flight. Your first time ever.
You should practice. Practice Ambien.
I don't think Ambien's going to make you just go crazy.
You take anything to sleep? You take like a melatonin?
No.
Just go to bed, huh?
I think if I was ever on like a 16-hour flight, I would probably look into taking something to make sure I don't get completely screwed up body clock wise. But no, I usually don't have an issue falling asleep.
I mean, this.
Do you?
Hit or miss. I don't take anything. I should. Maybe occasionally a melatonin or something.
I can usually fall asleep pretty quick. Like once, like if I'm like, hey, I'm going to bed. I can once the head hits the pillow, I can be out pretty quick.
I would say that's not my strength. We just talked about this the other night. Like in the middle, sometimes I'll just wake up in the middle of the night at like 3 a.m. and can't go back to sleep. I don't know if that's good or bad, but one way it's probably bad. But one way or the other, I do. Drew, do you take anything to sleep?
No.
I'm worried about like you always hear about like the side effects as it comes to those things, and they're like may cause weird dreams or something. You're like, man, I don't want to be on this airplane without people I know doing crazy stuff just because I took one Ambien. And I obviously understand.
You're starting to talk in your sleep.
I like to be alert.
I don't know. Yeah,
I don't sleep on. I can't sleep on a plane anyway. But like, I like to be like aware of what's going on.
If you were by yourself on the plane and you weren't with family member or a friend or a coworker, and it's your first time doing that, then yeah, maybe that's a problem. But like, if you were on a flight with the three of us all at once, why would you be nervous to take the Ambien? You'd be at least with other people that know you.
Yeah, yeah. I need somebody to make sure, in case they'd be like, okay, Cody clearly took this Ambien and it's going poorly. He's now taking his shirt off. At least you could try to like, I hope you wouldn't just leave. I would hope you'd be like, Cody, you know, try to babysit me a little bit if I got out of control. That's all. Take an edible, go to the Missouri side. You know, there's choices for you. Get on a plane. I usually have a drink or something. I've also never been on a 16-hour plane. Right, so I mean, maybe in that situation, Gold, to your point, I could do that. Feels like every story lately is like something going on in an airplane.
That is the trash.
We'll fly out
of the day.
I was gonna say, does that make you guys concerned? Because you're flying out.
We're not on the same flight, but we are both flying out next week.
Yeah, we're not on the same flight there or on the way back, but yes. All right, up next, we will get to the Chiefs Red Half Hour. Talk a bit more about the offensive expectations now that we are post-draft. That's coming up here on 96.5 The Fan.
Welcome in to the Chiefs Red Half Hour. Every day at 11:30 with Cody and Gold on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5 The Fan.
It is the Chiefs Red Half Hour. Thanks for joining us here on a Tuesday. We're going to get back into the defensive line in particular here in about 8 minutes or so. Plus, don't forget, coming up in the noon hour today, we'll talk more about where the Royals sit as they begin their road trip in Tampa, including something that Vern pointed out about this offense. And maybe we'll make you feel way better about how the team has performed considering the offensive performance. But let's start with this Chiefs Red Half Hour and the offensive expectations. Have they changed for you guys? Have the offensive expectations changed now that we're post-free agency? We're post-draft.
And we know all they added was an offensive tackle who may or may not play. A wide receiver who is currently, I mean, amongst the weapons after the running back. What is he, option 6, 7?
You're talking about Jalen Royals.
Yeah. Skill position players. Yeah. Is he like the sixth most important skill position player? 7th?
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, I think there's a chance that he actually could be 400 to 500 yard guy at some point this season.
But that
season.
Would still put you behind Hollywood, Rice, Worthy, Kelce, Pacheco, maybe Hunt. But yeah. And then, yeah, 7th round running back.
My expectation is that they're firmly inside the top 10 as an offense this year. And I know that they obviously can win games without that happening. We are just talking offense here because they won 15 games last year with the offense not being top 5,
not being top 8.
Because they had a great defense and they were able to find ways to win close games. And they obviously made the Super Bowl. So it's not saying that if they're not this, oh, they're screwed. Nobody's saying that. But if you were sick and tired of watching the offense struggle last year, and plus we got plenty of text.
I was sick and tired of watching it.
Everybody was. It was frustrating.
Boring.
It was tough to watch at times. if you want it to be more explosive and be a top offense, well, what it does have to be more explosive. My expectation is firmly inside the top 10. And for that to happen, I do think it requires one, Worthy, Rice, Brown, staying healthy. I would say that group together for 80%+ of the season, having all three on the field, factoring in suspension potential, factoring in injury risk. And in order for them to be more explosive, yeah, I think both have to happen, right? Like if they're going to be let's say you think they're going to be the sixth best offense. I don't know how they get there without them not being more explosive down the field.
I think they have to be that because that's the way they've constructed themselves. So since Patrick Mahomes came in the league, they have been the fifth best offense or better in every single year until the last 2 years when it's been miserable to watch this offense over the course of it. And I'm not comparing it to like what it's probably like to watch an actual miserable offense. Like I understand. I've also watched Aiden O'Connell play football. I got it. Mm-hmm. I'm not claiming they're that. But to be 12th and 14th in the league with Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes is unacceptable. I honestly think 10th is unacceptable. If you built your offense this way and you decided to wait until the fourth round to draft a wide receiver, wait until the seventh round to take a running back, and take a tackle that could start this year for you but may not, I think that you better have thought that your team was already top five in an offense. And
they have basically showed us through their actions that they thought if everybody would have been healthy,
they would have been.
They would have been. Yeah.
Is it like, I understand the logic, but at the same time, isn't this just like a risky way of thinking? That, like, because it makes sense on paper.
There's some risk.
You're just
risk,
saying,
yeah.
Hey, last year we put this whole offense together. We thought we had a super offense and we never saw it. Rashee Rice missed a huge chunk. Hollywood, huge chunk, right? Net Worthy right. was developing, whatever. We never actually saw the offense try to put in plan. So like, but this time it'll work. I never think they'd go 3 years in a row in that, but there is more flaw or risk in that line of thinking than I think they would like to admit, which is just run it back. This time it'll work. Cause last year they were the 12th best offense and they need to be like the fifth best offense.
They thought they had the right skill position players, but Pacheco got hurt. Hollywood Brown was hurt. Rice was hurt. Kelsey was then asked to do way more. I mean, I get their logic. Of course there's risk involved. Yeah.
I don't know if it's necessarily like a numbers thing. My expectations would be for them to have more significantly more explosive plays than they did last year. What that means for the rankings,
that
of the
would
offense,
be more points.
Think so, but I mean, if they're throwing, if they get 20 explosive plays, but they can't finish in the red zone, just like they did a couple years ago, maybe the numbers look exactly the same from a points perspective.
The hope is those explosive plays are 40-yard touchdowns.
Because all they've done is talk.
The Royals, who had five of them last year.
All that was last year was, we're going to be more explosive. This is the explosiveness. Look at us doing this in training camp. This is great. And then of course you have the injuries, which is some factor in it, but for how much they've talked about it and how much Patrick Mahomes was asked about it when we had his availability I don't know if it was last week or the week before. He's like, yeah, we're looking for more explosiveness. Like he said it again. So that is what I'm really interested. That's what I expect. The thing that's interesting, and this is not to blame because they've gone to the Super Bowl and everything like that and they've won one.
Yeah, it's not been bad.
The last 2 years, the offensive coordinator has been Matt Nagy.
Here we go again.
We're back on Nagy?
No. I'm not blaming.
There's plenty of people on your side.
Hang on. All right, I know. I understand. I'm not blaming anybody. Matt Nagy is a big reason why they have won the Super Bowl, because he has got a game plan that has won them games and everything like that. But should our expectations for them to be top five every single year actually be that way because of the way Matt Nagy does his thing? It's still good and it still works, but it's a little bit different Eric Bieniemy was doing.
You're talking
so should
about
our expectations be adjusted because of who the OC is?
No, because Andy Reid is the real OC, and I'll never be talked out of that.
I understand, but Nagy's Nagy's game. He's game planning. He's not calling plays, but he's game planning.
I understand, but
Andy's involved in that too, though.
But Andy does more of that too. And if Andy's in the room, they wanted to go deep last year. They were incapable of doing it. Basically, for what it's worth, I think they will be a top five offense. I actually think it's kind of impossible for them not to be most years. Last year, the reason why they weren't a top five offense, I assume, is because they had a massive stroke of injuries. The year before was because they had no one at wide receiver, and that's why they made the adjustment. The year before, they had no weapons, like zero weapons outside of Travis Kelce, and Juju Smith-Schuster was their leading receiver in a Super Bowl attempt. And so I do expect them to be a top five offense. And yeah, I get your point on Nagy in the sense that
I'm not
if you thought
him,
they
I'm
ran, it's like Harbaugh.
Different.
If they ran a more conservative offense, yeah. I don't think they think that way. And I don't think they were conservative last year because of Nagy. I think they were because
of the injuries.
Of the injuries. And the year before, I think it was because they didn't have the wide receivers. Because there's no Nagy was here before. And this is the other part that hurts your argument, Drew, is Nagy was here before when they were scoring 35 points a game. Like when they were the number one offense in the league, he was on this team. It's only conservative. Well,
we've acknowledged when Andy Reid is, when you have a head coach that's Andy Reid and the offensive mind that he is, the OC, I don't care whether it was Doug Peterson, Eric Bieniemy, Matt Nagy, this time, last time, the OC is never going to get credit when it's working well because of Andy Reid. And when it's not working well, it's the OC's fault. That is the reality of being the OC with an Andy Reid offense.
You take the job knowing that.
Yeah, that's just where it's at.
So if they finish 11th in offense,
then
we should be blaming Andy Reid point blank and period then based on the logic.
Assuming they don't win the Super Bowl, because then it doesn't freaking matter.
Yeah, sure. I just don't care. I just wonder if that, because, and I'm not, again, I'm not putting blame on Matt Nagy. I'm just saying things look differently. Like if they win a lot, let's say they go 14-3, and they look great.
Yeah.
But let's say they come up short and they don't win. But they win 14 games and the offense looks fine. Mm-hmm. But they're not they don't look the same as it was previously.
I think that's a skill position player problem. I think at that point then you've got the wrong pieces together.
The question will be how many times early in the season did they, what we view as just miss that deep pass to Xavier Worthy? How many of those can you connect on this year? Whether it's Worthy's spatial awareness, whether it's Mahomes being a better thrower of the football down the field, right? How many of those do you connect on? I didn't view that as scheme as much as it was execution. And the Super Bowl, I think, highlighted that too. As much as we discussed the offensive tackle performance, skill position players, where were they? Where were they making plays? Where were they getting open? So that is, to me, not necessarily, it wasn't a full-blown scheme issue. Now, we had issues in the Super Bowl. We talked about, hey, why did they not try to do this earlier in the game, etc. But I think the question will be, can they connect on some of those passes to Worthy? There was five of them in a five-week span that you're like, man, that was wide open. Bad throw or Worthy was stepping out of bounds, basically.
Does it even have to be the the deep ball? Because to me,
could be killer of efficiency. They've done that too.
I understand, like the not dink and dunk, but that might be a common phrase. But
no, but it's out of control. It's beyond dink and dunk. It's worse than that last year.
Which is where I think, looking, and this is where I think it kind of does, again, I know very little to nothing about scheme, but it feels more scheme related if you're looking at getting Xavier Worthy the ball quicker in terms of screens and helping set up with Juju blocking, or you're just trying to get the ball down the field a little bit more where it's a deep out or it's something to help advance the ball a little bit further where you're not having to go on. It doesn't feel like it's a struggle or it's a long, it really feels difficult to go 85 yards without doing it in 12 plays or 15 plays.
This is what was so funny about the team last year is that yards weren't the problem. Because like somebody pointed out earlier, and this is really what it is. Last year, there were times that I watched this offense and it looked like it was easy for them to move the ball down the field. It didn't look easy once they got down to the 20. Like they had massive red zone issues, probably even more so than the issues as it related to yards. Because I think that they were, not passing yards, but just total yards on offense last year. They weren't as bad as they were in points per game. Like, and some of that is because they're good at being efficient offenses, but some of that is just because they were incapable of getting the normal amount you would expect in the red zone at that time. I guess they were right around the same ranking, but it still felt easier, I will say, for a huge chunk of time last year. And, you know, some of that's just going to have to change, whether or not they get those deep plays or those, and I expect them to be a lot better on offense. I just do. I know we'll talk about that more as we get to like August and September, but I expect it. Drew, I need you to keep an eye out for one thing, though. According to reports, Bill Belichick's girlfriend promises a full statement today.
What? A full statement?
A full statement later today.
What a mess.
And then posted a lengthy April 10th email about Belichick expressing concerns over these publicity emails, defending her stance on, like, you know, backing off on, you know, helping him back off on some of these things as it were. She promises a full statement.
Was there a time?
later. It just says later today. A full statement later today as it regards to the incredibly awkward CBS morning news interview that took place on Sunday.
I'm with the text line from yesterday. I feel like we're just witnessing like a remake of Pretty Woman or something going on here. I'm not sure. Except Bill Belichick's Richard Gere, I guess, in this whole thing. I don't know what's going on, man.
The whole vibe on that situation.
Deep down, ultimately, it doesn't matter. Like, if we're being real, like, it's awkward, the interview's awkward, but deep down, it really doesn't matter.
To me personally, no, but that's not the purpose of the show.
It doesn't interact with weird things I see. It doesn't matter, right? Like, whatever relationship, whatever agreement that they have, deep down, it doesn't matter. Now, once it starts impacting North Carolina football, then it becomes more of an issue.
Yeah, well, but that's the thing. They said, there was a recent TMZ report this morning that said, not only was she doing the things like from the viral clip that we saw and we played on the show, where she's like, we're not talking about that for where they like met. She reportedly also stopped football related questions. And you're like, he's Bill Belichick. You don't have any like leeway in this avenue. Like, I told you the weirdest part about it to me is for a person who has been in control for as long as it is, it's weird to see him be controlled like a puppet in an interview setting.
As I said, the difference is he wasn't sleeping with everybody else.
I think the weird part about this as well was apparently there was not a single UNC PR athletic department, nobody representing North Carolina was there. It was just him and his girlfriend, which is very weird for a head coach of any way, shape, or form to be publicly available on national television without having a school representative there or a team representative there in any way, shape, or form.
Bleacher Report's reporting that, or TMZ was reporting that thing. That
TMZ's involved.
Hold on, TMZ was reporting that there was people in the North Carolina personnel that were worried her influence could become a problem.
Like what? She's not out there on the whiteboard drawing up plays.
At this rate, I don't know. How do we know?
Dude, they said she interrupted a football question.
At this rate, who knows?
They're like playing airplane on the beach, and he's not like, what do you think about the cover three against Virginia Tech?
I doubt it.
I think we're not far away from that based on the way that this relationship is headed. Do you think he teaches her about like coverages when they're just like hanging out? You know, like how people watch TV shows. I don't think he's like, let's get caught up on Righteous Gemstones. I assume he's paying attention to football at night.
You're saying he's teaching her the game, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I think's happening here.
This is crazy to think about.
Just keep an eye out for that statement. I think we'll want that later in the show.
Is that going to happen during the show? I don't know.
Let's hope it is.
It just said later today.
Let's hope so.
I don't want to. They did not give a specific timeline for when the statement
was released. Someone said Fesco shared that her parents own a sex shop. Is that true?
What?
I'm not even going to try to speculate on that. I have no idea.
What?
If that's true, the rabbit hole that I dug down the other day, boys, might not actually be that far of a stretch.
I have no idea if it's true. That would be...
If it's true...
They let the conspiracies run out of control.
If it's true, some of these conspiracies might have a half a percent more validity to them. I'll say.
I still think it's weird to not just...
Imagine if you're a UNC football player while this is all going on. You're a UNC football player while this is all going on, knowing that you're obviously have seen the same stuff, and these are 19, 20-year-olds. You got to be wondering, like, what the heck is really going on here? And then, is this my coach? What's going on?
I'm fascinated by this story because it's so... For a Hall of Fame, it just has, like, a weird energy to it. Just a weird energy. Let's talk more about the Chiefs on the field as it sits, and then we'll tell you how many people we're up to in the Cody and Gold road trip coming up here soon, and what's trending. We'll give you the updated numbers, as we'd love for you to go to 96.5 The Fan, buy more tickets there, and come join us in Springfield to watch Jack Caglione hopefully hit a homer on Saturday, where the weather looks like it's going to be sunshiny down there in Springfield. But quick question. We'd mentioned like the people it would impact in there, but let's evaluate. Time to look at the positions. We spent a lot of time evaluating the running back room as it sits. Let's evaluate the defensive line room. Now that they've added Gelati, and we know that they've added, why can't I think of the kid from Tennessee's name all of a sudden?
Norman Lott.
Now that they've added two guys in the defensive line to go with Charles Omenihu, Mike Dana, Chris Jones, Felix Anudika Uzama, the other guys we know are available. Where is this defensive line unit as it relates to the rest of the NFL? They were, in my opinion, okay last year, and partially is because They've got one really solid defensive line player in George Karlaftis and one elite defensive line player in Chris Jones to go with some other guys who can get the job done, like Charles Minnie, who came in late. This is the best defensive line they've had on paper in probably 2 or 3 years. I'm not going to tell you 10 years, not since like Justin Houston outside of that, but like probably since the last year of Frank Clark on paper, because they're certainly deeper than they've been in a while. The question is the upper end talent. A lot of this comes down to,
are they deeper?
Can they get to Norman Lott and Gelati? Can they get enough production for the sack numbers to be where they need to be? Well, that's part of the argument. If you think differently,
I don't know, to say they're that deep right now. So Karlaftis and Omenihu on both sides, and Chris Jones in the middle. Mike Dan has become a very, very nice player for this team. Underrated player still for this team. Turk Warden's gone. He was a guy that would be your depth piece that would be an impactful player. He's not there. Derek Nottie's not here anymore. You bring in Gelati, as you said. And Norman Lott. Norman Lott's going to rotate in. Felix is going to rotate in. I don't know if they're any deeper than they have been. I think there's a chance that they definitely are improved from the sack numbers from a year ago because of some other areas. The secondary, I think, is going to happen.
They were first in sacks 2 years ago.
Yeah, I think the second, not last year. Right? They dipped quite a bit. I think the secondary will help some of this, too. If we think that Trent McDuffie moving back inside with Fulton, with Noel Williams, that they're just going to be better there. Well, that can help the pass rush as well. So maybe that's it. But I don't know if I agree that they're deeper. It doesn't mean that we won't see more production. But I think if you look at
better than last year, but not better than 2 years ago, is that kind of where you are? If you just had to like ballpark it right now,
definitely as far as depth goes. Yeah, I just think the secondary has to be factored into why maybe they have better chance of getting after the quarterback this year.
The Chiefs last year were pretty much dead middle of the road. 39 team sacks last year. Best in the league was the Denver Broncos at 63. Worst was 28. So, like, they were closer, quite a bit closer to being at the bottom of the league than they were to being at the top of the league. But they were middle of the road. The 2 years before that, they finished second and second.
Yeah, it's just hard to say deep when Felix Anadike Uzama has been.
If he had developed, he is, you're probably.
And then you have a rookie in Gelati and a rookie in Norman Lott. And so that three guys right there are major question marks still heading into the season.
If Gelati is George Karlaftis, then the answer is they are as deep.
Sure.
Now, that's in a third round pick versus a first. And I only mention him because his own coach said he plays a lot like him. So
high motor, Cody.
He does seem to be in the similar vein as far as style of player as George Karlaftis. So it's certainly not outside the question. The other part is I'm trying to factor in, you and I are both very high on Charles Omenihu when he plays.
Yes.
And this will be the first full season they've gotten of Charles Omenihu in Kansas City. And they're once again getting a motivated Charles Omenihu, which I think has bore some pretty decent fruit when he's on the field. I'm thinking if I get 15 games out of Charles Minnie, again, an unknown based on his recent injury history. But if I get, you know, if I get 15 games out of Charles Minnie, I'm expecting the pass rush to be way better just based on that alone, even before Gelati or Norman Lott make a difference. And I think Norman Lott is going to help Chris Jones in a way that they haven't had someone help Chris Jones in that capacity in a while. And I'm not saying Turk Wharton was a bad player. He's obviously a very good player. That's why he got paid a bunch of money by the Carolina Panthers to go play football for them. But I do think Gelati possesses a different size element that could change the look of their defensive line a little bit as it relates to where they move Chris Jones about.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Heading into training camp when we get up there in July, you're going to always look at skill position players. So you're going to look at Royals. You're going to look at the running back. But what Norman Lott does at training camp, I think, is going to become, you mentioned Gelati, but Norman Lott as well, that could be a huge discussion. Like, I'm trying to, like, training camp, I'm actually excited, even though we've discussed the
more
draft
questions. Yeah,
we've discussed the draft and how, like, okay, how many, you know, day one starters, that kind of stuff. But think about the different areas. I mean, Noel Williams has a chance to play significant snaps. Norman Lott can rotate in this year. Gelati could rotate in. Royals could be the fifth receiver, fourth receiver for this team. The Smith, the running back, he's not gonna be the number one, has a chance
to
rotate.
I'll be curious to watch him in camp, see how he looks.
There's actually some more entry almost than I won't say than last year, because Worthy was the headliner. But there's definitely an opportunity, because last year you look at the draft class outside of Worthy. Who am I missing that really had a huge impact?
Has anyone looked up? Because the only piece of advice I'd give Breshad Smith, if he wants to have a impact in year one for the Chiefs, is hold on to the football. Has anyone looked up how are his fumble numbers? Because that would be the only part that I would just be like, hey, man, I don't know what you're doing the rest of this offseason or how you're planning on working out. I'm going to give you one piece of advice for training camp. Preseason, early part of the season, if you touch the ball, never fumble, man. Hold on. He was a wide receiver. You have to remember.
He started as well.
He was a wide receiver at Miami before he became a full-time running back at SMU. So
he had 1 year as a full-time running back.
Yeah.
Had over 1,300 yards, averaged 5.5, almost 6 yards a carry.
Last year, Rashard Smith, looks like last year, two fumbles. He had 2 fumbles in week 3, and that was it.
Okay, so he fumbled twice in one game and then never any other game?
Just a bad day against BYU. The only thing that's weird, you look at his production across the board, it's like, so like that game against BYU, who had a nice football season, 2 fumbles, 75 yards, destroyed bad competition, destroyed Florida State, destroyed TCU, against Louisville, only 52 yards, against Pitt, who was top 25 at the time, had 161 yards. Then against bad teams, again, Boston College was able to have 120 yards. Again, in the college football ACC title game, he did have 113 against Clemson's defensive front. Penn State, obviously,
that's
with
impressive.
Abdul Carter and everything, 62 yards. So, I wouldn't say it was like, oh my gosh, he didn't perform at all against quality teams. But of course, he did what he should do against lesser competition.
What a fun unknown, though, because he was only a running back for a single year. And he wasn't a productive wide receiver at Miami. He was on the field, and he certainly caught passes, but there's a reason why he transferred to SMU and switched positions, and that's because it wasn't working as a wide receiver. Now, I always assume that means you should be a slightly better running back out of the backfield, something I very much like in this offense and very much enjoy seeing in this offense. I would think you'd be slightly better than average at running back if you played wide receiver for 3 years at the Division I level, but we'll see.
Up next, we're going to get to what's trending and a stat that Vern pointed out that puts the Royals' start in perspective considering where this offense has been at. It's pretty telling. That's coming up next.